Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from back on the East Coast, Bob Griswold, and he's with Ready Made Resources, an organization that stresses the importance of being prepared for all sorts of things that can happen. And believe me, we live in a very uncertain world. Here in California, we had 4 earthquakes this last month. Of course, none of them really did any serious damage, but a couple of pretty good-sized ones up there off the coast of Eureka, up in the north coast of California. But we can see the handwriting on the wall, and there have been major earthquakes even down in the Mississippi Valley and Tennessee area, areas that we ordinarily don't see earthquakes, and yet probably the biggest earthquake we ever had in the United States was in that region back in the 1800s. So, and then, of course, Bob had an opportunity recently to go over, and I think I've forgotten whether he was in, I think he was in Bangkok, or he was anyway, somewhere, maybe it was someplace over there in the Micronesia area, or over there in the Malaysian area, at a conference where they had people from all over the world. I mean, there were tens of thousands of people there, where they were selling various types of things that you would use in case of chemical or biological or nuclear warfare. And all the countries of the world are preparing to protect their citizens, of course, except the United States government, which really doesn't seem to have any concern at all about having an adequate civilian defense system. Most countries have a civilian defense system to protect their people. We have no system. We don't protect our borders. We don't have any real facilities in case of a major catastrophe. And, well, I think this is why Bob does what he does. Hi, Bob. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doctor. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine. Where was that? Was that Bangkok?
Singapore. Singapore.
Singapore. Okay. It was at Singapore. How many people do you think were at that conference you attended?
Well, usually these conferences draw somewhere between 20 to 50,000 people, somewhere in that range. And they're higher ups in the government, different defense ministers, commerce ministers, people like that are actually procure military officers, and as they call the brasses there to look and review all the latest, greatest toys that they make to kill people with.
All right. And, of course, there's also the defenses to help the people, so they don't get killed. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, yeah, I mean, but, it's kind of like, it's like the guy, I start the crime wave, and I'm the guy who sells body armor, too, It's kind of like I'm enjoying both ends of the business. I sell the things that kill, and I sell the things that protect.
Of course, you don't sell the things that kill.
No, I don't. I'm just saying that's the, the arms industry is really, probably one of the most immoral industries on the planet, Doctor. It really is. I would sell you the gun knowing that you would kill my son with it. I mean, that's the way these armed industries work. I mean, just case in point, we just sold Pakistan. Nothing wrong with Pakistan. I mean, if we leave, they want to be what they are, leave them alone, let them be what they are. But we just sold them, 24 nuclear-capable F-16 planes. Great for business in down in Texas. It's really good for business. I mean, they get to keep the plant open longer and make nuclear-capable F-16s.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Bob Griswold. We're going to be talking about what people should be thinking about as far as preparation for themselves and their families. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Griswold, and we were talking about the conference he had been to over in Singapore, and somewhere between 20 and 50,000 people there. And, of course, they're selling the various things that can be utilized to protect yourself against the terrible weapons that they're also selling here. And are a lot of the countries really buying up the material to protect their people?
Well, I mean, the arms industry is probably one of the largest industries on the planet today. When you consider the fact that of the you know, the Soviets, the Russians are involved, the U.S. is involved. In fact, some of the third world countries that you don't think about too much are actually some of the shipbuilding, major shipbuilding is going on there. And yes, they really are. The world is preparing to fight a war, a very, very devastating war with weapons that the average person can't even conceive that are been developed. And not only in the nuclear, chemical, and biological arena. I mean, I really think the whole reason why you have the nuclear reduction push is because that there are other weapons that are far more dangerous than nuclear weapons, and not just biological and chemical, but, you know, energy type weapons that can be beamed out from space. And there's just so much of it out there, Doctor. The thing I'd like to just say is that, you know, you cannot protect yourself from everything. Obviously, the governments of the planets are trying to protect their leaderships and the people that count. A lot of times, the regular person will just be, you know, cannon fodder to say. But in the United States, you know, we have a unique problem here. We have two open borders. We have anybody who wants to come into our country illegally basically can come into our country. We have, you know, invited, and this is not meant to be a racial statement, because, you know, anybody who believes in the goals and ideals of America, believes in our Constitution, is an American. But we've opened our border up to bring in basically cultures that are foreign, that have never known what it is to celebrate, you know, a republic and freedom and those things. And they're setting their ability up to promote the very thoughts that will not promote the United States as we know it today. And there's so many things that we're doing. It seems like it's on a self-destructive course. That should some of these things happen that you and I think believe will, the average American is going to need more than what's just sitting in the cupboard to endure perilous times that are ahead.
And I think that you're absolutely right. And, of course, one reason why we enjoy having you on is because I think that we can just sort of talk about the things that people need to start thinking about. Doesn't do any harm to have them. It's sort of like life insurance. You hope you never need it.
Well, you know, Doctor, you know, eventually...
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was just saying that attending these meetings, he's more convinced than ever that the major countries of the world are planning another terrible and catastrophic war, that there are weapons here that even are far more devastating than chemical and biological and nuclear weapons. Some of these energy weapons that can be actually used from space can wreak terrible, terrible devastation. And should we come to this, and, you know, I don't think we're too far away from the advent of World War III. All you need to do is see all the new books that are coming out now on the coming war with Iran. They got one from the Congressman Kurt Weldon. He's written it, talking about the very real threat from Iran, how we're going to have to prepare to counter that. Ken Timmerman has a new book out on the threat from Iran and how we're going to have to counter that. And, of course, the conclusion you get from reading these books and so many of the articles within our media today, and believe me, the establishment plants articles to convince the American people that, well, we're just going to have to go to Iran before they attack us. After all, that's what it's all about. Iran's going to attack New York or maybe Chicago or who knows, put off some sort of a nuclear blast up in outer space that will simply paralyze the electronics in the entire country. We're simply going to have to go to war with Iran. We cannot allow them to get nuclear weapons, and yet Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Israel has nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia has nuclear weapons. India has nuclear weapons.
Korea.
Certainly China and Russia and France and Great Britain all have nuclear weapons, but we don't seem to be worried about that. And now, of course, the boogeyman is Iran, and, well, we're just going to have to do something about that, aren't we? And I really believe it's only a matter of time before we are plunged into World War III. And, of course, people never stop and think. You never know how a war is going to end. So pick up the story from there, Bob.
Well, you know, that is such an accurate thing that's why, you know, so many, you know, you read, be careful when you pick up the sword, because you do not know when you'll be able to lay it back down again. and going to war is something that should not be taken on in a trivial manner. It should, because again, you pick the sword up. Nobody knows how the conclusion is going to be and when the conclusion will be. The sword is a hard thing to put down, and by the time you put it down, really nations, maybe if not the planet, can be devastated. But it goes further than that, just the threat of war right now, Doctor. We see our energy cost in this country just absolutely soaring. They're predicting at least, for the average gas price, I know in California some places it is, but $3 a gallon, if not higher. You have infectious diseases emerging from the planet that we just don't even know how to deal with. Avian flu, SARS, the West Niles. You look at what we've done in the agricultural industry, that science has really pushed the limits and it's destroying the ability to promote agriculture in a lively manner. And these things are all verifiable. It's not just, I'm just not saying these things to try to scare people. In fact, I don't believe in scaring people. I mean, fear does no one any good. We have to approach things in a really systematic and logical manner and just evaluate the data we have at hand. And from there, say, we can't stop this from happening. I can't stop it from happening. But I can look at it and say, what can I do to protect my family? I mean, we just adopted a little boy, 2.5 years old. And, I look at him every night, and I really just love him like he's my own. And I'm thinking, I want to be able to provide for this little guy till he's old enough to do it for himself. And I have a wife and family, those things. And so those things come to my mind. If these things happen, what can I do now to maybe help my family out so that it's not so dire?
All right, fine. Well, what can people actually do?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know if you're selling it or what, but I always promote the water. People need pure drinking water. If we don't have it, and that's the first thing that could become contaminated, or the ability to acquire drinking water, everybody needs to have the big Berkey in their home, and that, because that can take out all the heavy metals, the fluorides, the mercuries, the leads, arsenic, farm runoff, all of that.
Well, we have the big Berkey, and we have the Berkey Light, so people.
Yeah, so those are available.
I think they're good because they don't require electricity, and there's simply a gravity feed. You put water in the top, it comes out the bottom. And I think you're absolutely right.
Right,
you have to have water.
We use ours. We don't drink any water that comes out of the faucet, Doctor. And it's just because if you go to the CDC website, they admit to at least 8 million people a year becoming sick in this country just off tap water. And again, I think it's a thing of just also maintaining our health, because the lead, the fluoride, the chlorine, and all those things that are in chemical, mixed with all the other environmental toxins we have, if we reduce our exposure to those, we actually, maybe prevent ourselves from getting sick from a disease, but we also aid our health, and I think health is probably one of our greatest assets we have. If we're healthy, we can take care of things. Also, I think people need to have at least a month's worth of food in their home. Again, it's not just me saying this. I mean, even our government's come out and said this, that it's a good, prudent thing. Ready-made resources, we carry all the long-term food storages. And I'm a big promoter of alternate energy. It might be expensive to go with some alternate energy, but in the light of not having energy or even being able to reduce our energy costs some, I think it's a very viable thing.
You're talking really about solar power.
Yeah, solar or wind or hydroelectric. But even you don't even need to do that. You can just have a battery bank with an inverter and a small generator to do it. And that way, if the power goes down, you can maintain some electricity for a while. Those things to me are very, very important. And if you live in a high-risk area, this sounds maybe a little strange, but I think the ability to protect yourself from chemical and biological weapons, it's going to happen. It's only a matter of time before the technologies out there and somebody gets a hands on it and does something with it and infects a lot of people. There are ways that we can live in such a way to help ourselves in those kind of environments so that we don't become victim to it. A guy by the name of Philip Hogue, has written a very, very good book, and it goes into all the different scenarios. We carry the book. It goes into all the different scenarios of what a person can do for each different kind of scenario we've mentioned, whether it's in agricultural, bioterrorism, whether the agricultural system breaks down, or if gas prices go so high that food becomes less available, a terrorism attack just from a foreign enemy. And any of these things that we face, natural disasters, and what the average person can do to protect themselves in those things that we might not normally think about. And I stress this because I believe our nation's survival is not based on what happens in Washington, D.C. I think it's really based on the middle-class average American family And the civil defense thing that used to be in the 60s was, you know, as your ability to survive is enhanced, my ability to survive is enhanced. So it's like a community effort thing. It's not that I'm advocating running off in the hills. I don't believe that. I believe that we are part of a community. And that, you know, if we're better prepared when disasters happen, we can be the first responder on the scene because we don't have to worry about our immediate needs. We can go take care of things that other people will need and therefore benefit our community.
Well, I think that there's certain things that you do need. I mean, certainly you need to have first aid kits, and I know you carry that. You need a certain amount of food that's on hand. You need, of course, to consider what you'd do if there was a biological attack. And there's certain things that, not expensive things that you would need. You'd certainly have to be in your house, but you'd have to be able to stay there for a period of time. And the same thing would hold true for a chemical attack. The same thing would hold true for a nuclear attack, because certainly what you would want to do is simply get away from the contamination, and ordinarily after a period of time, most of this would subside. At least you would not be panicked. And the important thing to do is to have a plan, to think of the possibility and hope and pray it never comes to pass. But I think it is well worthwhile to get hold of Bob's catalog. And would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your catalog?
Yeah, they can call
any of the things that you have.
Oh, they can call after the program, 800-627-3809. That's again 800-627-3809. It's a little over 150 pages in the catalog, so we do carry a substantial amount of what you would call preparedness type equipment, self-reliant equipment. If you've never ordered from us before, it's $5, which we do refund if you ever make a purchase. After that, we send them out at no charge. Or they can visit our website, which is readymaderesources.com. I'm always adding some products on there. I was just adding some. Some rainwater collecting equipment for people who want to collect rainwater off the roof and store it that way. We just listed that on the website today. So we're always adding to the website. We have valuable information that you can download for free off our website, first aid information, information about nuclear, chemical, and biological attacks. We have Kreese and Carey's book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, that's free to download off the Internet. And so there's a lot of good information there that's available for people, because I can't stress this enough, Doctor. I am a citizen of this country, and I'm a citizen of the state of Tennessee, and I belong to a certain county in Tennessee, and that's my obligation, because I have people around me, I have a community, and I want to be able to help in my community if one of these disasters happen. And the best way to do that is to make sure that my home is secure, and that way I can go out and help my neighbor. And that's what makes the United States strong. It's not what goes on in Washington, D.C. It won't be the billions of dollars that's wasted on Homeland Security. It will be what is done among the average people of America.
And I think it's so amazing. Homeland Security was originally given $40 billion, and they gave a lot of it away to various police departments to buy things that they didn't need and they really didn't want. But of course, if they didn't take the money, it was going to be wasted. And so that, you know, out in the middle of the Midwest, you know, without a town, no town closer than maybe 200 or 300 miles away, why, they get some sort of a little robot to pick up a terrorist bomb if they've ever had one. Of course, they've never had a terrorist there, but they got this contraption, cost $150,000. Other cities have bought armored personnel carriers. So much of the material that the Office of Homeland Security has purchased for itself or allowed to be purchased was just totally unnecessary. And yet, instead of putting it together a civilian defense system to defend us, as we had, you know, after the Second World War, as they have in Sweden and the Scandinavian countries and Russia and communist China and countries throughout the world to defend their population, we have no defense for America. We don't defend our borders. We're not planning on defending our civilians. And you have to ask yourself, why aren't we setting up a civilian defense system to protect our citizens? We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. But Bob, of course, you would be talking to people across America who are concerned about, you know, the future, but how many people really are concerned? How many people are really making some preparation for themselves and their families? What's your take on it?
Well, doctor, you know, the sad part about it is that we do live in a consumer society where we're bombarded with the need for the new car, the jet ski, the snowmobile, the four-wheeler, the vacation. You name it, it's on TV, and we need it, and because that takes up so much of people's thought that we have to have the new and greatest little gadget, there's a lot of people don't leave a lot of money left over for thinking of this because it's something that people try to avoid. Who wants to think? I mean, we feel the bump under the skin. Who wants to go to the doctor? We try to avoid that. And if we just don't think about it, the little bump under the skin will go away, and it can't be something serious anyhow because that happens to other people. But, you know, that being said, it's unfortunate that only a very small percentage of the people in America really give any thought to their domestic security. You know, if one of these events happens, the question is, how long does it take first responders to really first respond? And then how long does it take for governments, even on their best day, even with the most benevolent feelings that they have towards their people, how long does it take the federal government to mobilize to get stuff going, if they can get stuff going? You know, with a big enough disaster, it's just not going to happen. If a tsunami-type disaster of equivalent destructive power, something of like that, whether it's man-made or natural, happened to this country, how long would it take the federal government to mobilize and really help people out? Well, I think it'd take quite a long time, and I think there'd be a lot of people in a real pinch during those times, you know, and that's why I say the food, the water, if you live in an area where there's possibility of contamination, some type of protective equipment, and then, you know, some ability to make electricity. And that can start all the way from, you know, a little solar battery charger where you can recharge your flashlight batteries out in the sun, all the way up to a whole house system. You know, ready-made resources runs on solar energy largely. You know, on the hot days when I turn the air conditioner on, we do draw some power off the grid. But overall, we produce the electricity we make. It was a little bit of an investment to do that, but it gives me great feeling. In fact, you know, if the power does go out, and it does from time to time, you know, my business is still running, and I think the people around it go, you know, how did they get his power back on and not mine?
Well, now how many solar powers panels do you actually have, Bob?
Well, I have a dozen. I have a dozen panels. I have a wind generator, and I have a backup generator that I can also use to charge the battery bank in my house. And so, you know, basically what I'm running in my office are lights and computers, which really on high demand products, and it's, like I said, is in terms of, so I turn the AC on. But right now the nice thing about it is also, if you're thinking about doing a whole house system for the month of June, Trace has really marked down their main part of the system, the inverters, about 35%, whereas an inverter that was $2,800, $2,900 is now only $2,200, $2,300. So they've put substantial savings on during the month of June, and we carry all the Trace equipment, ExcelTech, we carry all the solar panels, BP, Siemens, Shell, all that. We do carry Outback systems, and then again, from very small to the battery charger so you can listen to shortwave or run your TV, all the way up to a whole house system. And again, I think the ability to make electricity is such, it's a freeing feeling that to know that it's the monopoly, the ultimate monopoly in America, that we have to be connected to these massive grids, these huge power-producing facilities, and nothing wrong with them. But, you know, if our government took a different path...
Hold that thought there for just a moment, please.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Griswold from Ready Made Resources. And if you have a question, a comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're simply suggesting that people give some consideration to be prepared. You know, we saw after the Second World War that when there was a conscious effort to condition the minds of the American people of the possibility of a nuclear war, and a lot of people put in underground shelters, bomb shelters of that, and then the government, for some reason, changed their policy completely. And not only did they stop suggesting that people make any preparation, they actually did away with the entire structure of our civil defense system here in the United States. I know at one time we had 400 mobile hospitals. They could be moved immediately into any part of the country where they were needed. And, of course, you could get local doctors and nurses to staff them. But everything you needed for surgery and everything you needed to operate, everything you needed to take care of ill people was available. And all of those hospitals have been effectively, the civilian defense hospitals have simply been done away with. And you have to ask yourself, why are they not making any preparations here in the United States? In Switzerland, for instance, every school has a bomb shelter, and there are many, many bomb shelters and places to protect the population in all the major cities. This is certainly true in Scandinavian cities. It is true in Russia. They have a vast system of civilian defense. They have the same thing in China because they want to defend their people. Here in the United States, we have underground shelters for the vice president, for the president, for some members of Congress, for the people who would run our government. There are actually some here in California, but they're only for the elite. There are absolutely no arrangements being made to protect the average individual. I know our friend who runs the newspaper up there in Napa has actually seen this one center they have hidden in the hills up around Sonoma. Where, of course, they were going in, they were flying in their black helicopters, and they were building this underground shelter for the prominent politicians. But there is absolutely nothing to defend the elite now, pardon me, nothing to defend the common people. And so this is why we suggest that if you are thinking about your family, if you're really concerned, understand they manipulate our reality. We believe what we're supposed to believe. And today we are being told there's nothing to worry about. And I believe we live in a very, very uncertain world. I believe that the people who run our country, everybody who run the world, are planning on bringing about World War III. And should that come about, why there would be tremendous shortages of everything you need. Like life insurance, or like automobile insurance, or like fire insurance for your house, you hope that you never have to use it. But it's sure good to have things on hand. So, Bob, I'm going to let you go ahead and get your telephone number and your website out here just one more time. And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Bob before we have to let him go, go ahead.
Well, they can also call if they have questions about food preparedness or water, solar, any of that. They can call us at 800-627-3809. Again, that's 800-627-3809. They can order our catalog. It's $5, which is refunded if you ever make a purchase. Or they can go to our website, which has a substantial amount of our products on it, and purchase online. It's ready-made resources, and that's all one word, readymaderesources.com. If you can't find it, just go to Google and type in ready-made resources, and it'll bring you right to the website. So that's what we have, Doctor. Again, I just encourage people to think about it, pray about it. Don't act in panic, because panic doesn't serve anybody any good. Fear is not a good thing.
You have various types of radiation meters, in case it was a radiological attack. And, of course, we actually carry a wonderful book written by Igor Shafid, who was trained in Moscow in chemical, biological, and nuclear warfare. It's called Inside the Red Zone. It just has a list of all the things you can buy at your local drugstore, things that you need to have on hand. You'd never think of now, but things that you should have on hand in case there is any sort of a major catastrophe sometime in the future.
Well, if they just want to call, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
All right, fine. And, of course, you have an excellent book up there on nuclear warfare. You can actually pull that down for nothing off the website, can't they? What's the name of the book?
It's Nuclear War Survival Skills.
And who wrote that?
Creason Carey.
Right, and he was one of the great champions of this. He passed away recently, but
yes,
he spent many years trying to awaken the American people to the very real danger we face. This is not an imaginary danger, because believe me, if there is another war, it may well be a nuclear war. You don't like to think about it, but, an ounce of prevention is certainly worth a pound of cure. Thanks very much for being with us, Bob, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to have open lines for this next half hour, and then the following hour, we're going to have Andrew Skousen with us from the World Affairs Brief. But we've been actually rereading something that was written in the early 1980s, put together by the Lawrence MacDonald, or Larry MacDonald, Foundation about aid and trade with the Soviet Union. And, you know, it's the most amazing thing is you read about the articles that were being put out during the 1960s and 1970s during the Vietnam War, when we were, of course, involved in a war in Vietnam, and American boys were dying of wounds created by weapons created by the Soviet Union, which was being financed by the United States. And you go back and you read all those articles, which actually are clipped there in this aid and trade document, and you find out that we were funneling massive amounts of money into Russia. We built the Kama River plant, the largest truck manufacturing plant anywhere in the world. It was bought and paid for and built. The technology was there. The money came from the United States during the course of the Vietnam War when Russia was taking those trucks and sending them to North Vietnam to take the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos so they could kill our boys in South Vietnam. Now, why would you do anything that stupid unintentionally? It was during the Vietnam War when we put up the money for the Fiat motor plant that was built in Russia. And, of course, the money was important. The Italians built the plant, but we put up the money for it. Lent the money to the Soviet Union. Eventually, of course, we wrote off all the money, so much of the money that the Russians owed us. But we lent them the money during the Vietnam War so they could build the trucks and other war-making materials for North Vietnam. And, of course, it was the plant, the truck-building plant at Gorky. It was actually put together by Henry Ford. It was actually built during the 1920s or early 1930s. And, of course, that truck plant was still putting out Ford motor trucks. It was being, of course, updated with the latest Ford technology. And the Ford motor trucks, in addition to the trucks that were produced at the Kama River plant, were then being sent to North Vietnam to carry the weapons down the Ho Chi Minh Trail that were being used to kill our boys. And if you go into the background of the Vietnam War, you find out that our men were not allowed to mine the harbor at Haiphong to keep the supplies out, to bomb the rail yards at Haiphong, to do anything at all to interfere with the passage of military equipment to the Viet Cong who were killing our boys. Why would that have been? We'll be back in just a moment and welcome your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is going to be open lines for the next half hour until Andrew Skousen comes on. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And right now we've got Carlos on calling from Carson, California. Hi, how are you doing, Carlos?
You're good, Dr. Stan. Just listening to your previous guest. About the coming Third World War, that's possible coming Third World War. And I watched something very strange happening in Latin America. You got all these Marxist nations that are lining up and consolidating themselves, positioning themselves. You got Venezuela, Argentina, Colombia, lining themselves up with Cuba. And then the other day, they had a summit the other day where there were also all these nations, Latin American nations, had a summit with China and Russia and also several Arab countries.
Right, I saw that.
So that leads me to believe they are positioning themselves for a front against us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the thing is, Carlos, if you look at it, you know, of course, you're looking at it from a logical point of view. But who is it who's financing communist China today? Just this last week, I saw where the Bank of America was going to spend $2.5 billion to buy 9% of a large Chinese communist government-owned bank. Why would Bank of America be putting $2.5 billion into a Chinese communist bank being operated by the Chinese communist government? Doesn't really make sense. And yet, you look and we see we're guaranteeing these loans, massive loans from various international agencies, so China can build their nuclear power plants. We've $5 billion in loans we have guaranteed. We're building up in communist China today the finest enemy money could buy. It's just exactly what we did, you know, to Hitler's Germany. We built up his entire military capacity so we could have a war. And that's exactly what we're doing in communist China today. That's exactly what we're doing in Russia today. And if you read the Wall Street Journal regularly, as I do, it's amazing how often you find this major corporation is investing $100 million or $10 billion or $2 billion in either Russia or China. Why are they doing that?
Well, Dr. Stan, you said it. They're beefing up the Chinese forces, because they're creating two different enemies.
Right.
They're creating an enemy here versus an enemy in China, and they did that with Hitler, like you mentioned. And the thing that's so deceptive, a lot of these corporations that are being built up in China are truly, I believe, in essence, the international bankers' corporations. They may have Chinese names behind them, but they're truly the financial elite's corporations, disguised as Chinese companies. Hutchinson Whampoa, I believe, in my opinion, is probably, in essence, belongs to the Western powers here. The international financial elite. It may have a Chinese name, just like when they transferred historically, the British transferred their assets here, and the Rothschild banking family merged their assets with the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Harrimans, and they profited here for 100 years. And now that they've exploited all their profits here, they're transferring their wealth now to China to reap more profits, and they're going to make that a formidable an enemy. We're going to have to go to war against these people.
And I fear you're absolutely right. In fact, if any of our listeners would like to perhaps see letter I found in Colonel House's paper, it was sent to Colonel House, who of course was the major Luciferian figure behind the Wilson administration and behind the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration. The letter was sent in 1936 by Ambassador Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany, and he's writing to a Colonel House and saying, why are American corporations building up the war-making capacity of Germany here? I mean, nobody wants a war. We just got through with the First World War, and yet we have 100 American corporations. They're building up the war-making capacity of the Germans, and they can't make any money on this because of the exchange restrictions. They can't get any money out of the country. Why are they doing that? And Colonel House is asking, pardon me, Ambassador Dodd is asking Colonel House, well, I'm sure Colonel House knew exactly what was going on. And we never found the reply that he had made to that letter, but I think it documents what we've said so often and what Professor Sutton had said in his book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, and so many other books that went into the financing of Adolf Hitler. There was one, Trading with the Enemy. We created the best enemy money could buy, and then we sent our boys to Europe to die on the beaches of Normandy to conquer the enemy that we had created. And I fear this will happen again.
Well, Dr. Stan, you know, what I fear is that we're going to be engaged in multiple fronts all over the world, one in the Middle East, and then you see the lining up of nations here in Latin America, the Marxist nations. I think we're going to have another front there. In fact, we have over 1,000 troops already in Colombia. It's not publicized, but we have, I believe, some troops already also in Venezuela. And on top of that, I believe we're going to have a front here when this illegal immigration thing blows all up, and you have the pro-illegal immigration forces fighting the illegals. So we're going to be involved in several fronts all simultaneously here in the coming years. On top of that, you're going to have we're heading for an economic collapse. Now, can our country sustain all that, all the pressure that's going to be built upon us?
Well, I'll tell you what, Carlos, there's no instance in all history where a nation has turned against God where God has not turned against that nation. And I will tell you that unless this country turns back to God, why this country will be destroyed. And you point out the illegal immigration. It's estimated by some people there are up to 12 million illegal immigrants. It's suggested by others that the figure is 20 million illegal immigrants who are in this country. I have a little gadget on my telephone that I can tell, the numbers that called me before, but so now, of course, my telephone is giving me the answer in Spanish. And so often when I put in a call to a corporation, I get one message in English and another one in Spanish. Why are they giving the messages in Spanish? Why? Because they're trying to create a bilingual country. Back in 1988, when I was running for Congress, Senator Hayakawa, who was a Japanese-American but a good patriot, he was an American, he may have come from Japan, but he loved this country, and he wanted to unify the country, knowing that language is how you unify the country. He tried to get through a legislation through the United States Senate that said that English would be the official language of the United States. And I remember Congressman Dannemeyer was working in the House of Representatives trying to get the legislation through, and neither Congressman Dannemeyer nor Senator Hayakawa could understand why there was so much opposition to making English the official language of the United States. Well, that was 1988. Now, of course, we're, 17 years later, and we see the globalists doing everything they can to create a bilingual country and, increasingly to allow the people from a different culture with different views who loyalty is to Mexico, and they believe that we have stolen the Western states from them, and there's an intense hatred and resentment of America because we live so well and they live so poorly, and they're building up a revolutionary cadre in this country. And I subscribe to the communist publications, and the last two or three pages of the Weekly World that I get is always in Spanish. Why? Because they're appealing to these people. They're being manipulated. They're being used. And the Americans can't realize that there would be people in Washington, D.C. who are trying to actually establish a revolutionary cadre in this country. And when we get into real economic problems, and if we have attacks outside this country, if we have civil unrest and we move into chaos and crisis, don't you worry. The elitists in Washington, D.C. have a plan. We're going to have martial law in America to maintain our freedom. And people really can't understand anything could be that diabolical, but we're dealing with truly diabolical people. Why is it that you think that they refuse to try to close our borders? Why does the President of the United States refer to the American patriots who went down to guard the border as vigilantes? Why would the President of the United States demonize people who are doing what he should be doing? And I think the answer should be pretty self-evident, don't you, Carlos?
Well, exactly. There's multiple objectives that the globalists are pursuing through illegal immigration. One, of course, is the allowing the influx of all these illegals and the cheap labor that comes in with it will force a contraction of the wages because there's going to be competition for lower wages since they're willing to work for lower wages. It's going to force the rest of the population to lower their wage expectations also. And then, of course, they get another aspect of illegal immigration is the money that is sent back to a lot of these countries to prop them up, which is redistribution of our income, basically. That's what it boils down to. And then the diluting of our culture with making our culture subservient to all these different languages, so it actually dilutes the sovereignty of our culture. But I believe the greatest the greatest danger lies in that they're building up an area of conflict here, Dr. Stan, just like they did in Palestine.
That's exactly what they're doing, Carlos, and they know what they're doing. What you want is, of course, two different cultures against one another, aligned against one another. That's what they've done in France, in Canada, where they have the French-speaking Canadians and the English-speaking Canadians. That is what they have in Palestine. This is a planned program to create conflict here, and the American people just can't see it for some reason.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's so evident. I mean, look, they use the IMF and the World Bank to bankrupt the Latin countries. Most of the presidents of these Latin countries come from Harvard University. They're agents of these international monetary institutions. They put them in their countries, and then they tell them, we're going to lend you money, And of course, most of that money you're going to use to pay us back in interest, and you're going to use very little to upgrade their economies. Therefore, it's inevitable that their economies are going to falter and collapse, and that's going to force, that's going to have the other effect of the people into the United States.
And that, of course, exactly is what is happening. And, of course, we could, of course, guard our borders. We're not doing it. Now, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations and Lou Dobbs even commented on this the other evening on nationwide television. The plan is, well, if we could simply unite with Mexico, then it would be easier to board, to guard the southern border of Mexico. So we would simply then have to board, guard the Canada, and we'd unite Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Then we could guard the southern border of Mexico and keep people from coming in, and that would solve our problem. What insanity is that? Right now, of course, the Mexicans guard their southern border. They won't allow people from Central America into their country. They don't want them coming in and taking advantage of their society and taking jobs from their people. So they guard their border in Mexico. Vicente Fox guards their southern border and then objects when we guard our own border. But yeah, you have to understand that these people in charge know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. And unfortunately, you know, the average American finds it difficult to believe that the people who lead both political parties could actually have a different allegiance, have no allegiance to America, but to this globalist dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion, and, of course, the New World Currency, which is coming down the line. I think the cashless society, the New World Monetary System, which is what they want, where no one in this country or in Mexico or Canada or anywhere in the world will buy or sell unless they have the mark. So what we're really doing is seeing the ultimate destruction of the United States. But it's happening so slowly, and of course things are still good enough, the economy is doing well, as long as you've got a job. But if you lose your job and you try to get a new one, chances are you're not going to get a job that will pay anywhere near as well as the previous one, and you're not going to get the health benefits and the other benefits. And very slowly, they're impoverishing the American people as they transfer the wealth of our country to other nations. And it is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. We did the most amazing interview about either yesterday or the day before with John Perkins, I guess it was yesterday, who wrote The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Have you read that book, Carlos?
Yes, I certainly did. Yes, of several months.
Wasn't that an amazing book?
Well, it tells the truth of how we're really destroying their economies over there. The corporations are going in and taking over the agricultural areas, and through revolution, which they create to the Central Intelligence Agency, they're forcing people out of the agricultural areas, and of course the corporations are coming in and taking over the assets.
Oh, yeah, really very interesting. What you say is exactly correct. But yesterday when I talked to John Perkins, we re-interviewed him again after a matter of several months. He was commenting that he had been offered sometime, I think probably about the early 1990s, the opportunity to take over the electric industry in Bolivia. He would go down there because it's owned by an American company. We own the electricity for Bolivia. This American company offered the job to John Perkins, and he went down and he looked at it, and he realized that the president of the Bolivian electric company would be the most powerful man in the nation. Why? Because they're always having revolutions there, and of course he can cut off the electricity, to the president, so he couldn't, function. He could cut off the electricity to the rebels if they were in the military or they were certainly in the barracks. By being able to control the electricity, he could really control the country. And he offered to take the job if they would allow him to do what was best for the people there and to help them build up their economy. And of course, Bolivia is a terribly, terribly poor country. They're good people, hardworking people, but of course they are constantly exploited by these economic policies that have been implemented. And of course, John Perkins was told by the company, no, if he was going to be there, he would have to go after their interest to keep the people impoverished. He would not be allowed to help the people. And so he turned down the job, and You know, it was an amazing, amazing interview, one of the more interesting interviews I've done with him. And as he pointed out, he was quite willing to take the job if he could utilize his position to help the people there. And that was the last thing that our establishment wanted. Well, Carlos, oh, I guess we lost Carlos. So anyway, if he wants to call back, or we've got about 3 more minutes before we have to wrap up the program. But I think that it's very important for the American people to know that there are forces working behind the scenes. And if you haven't read my newsletter, the one that just went out, it's the May newsletter about the occult hierarchy, and then, of course, you're going to want to get the June newsletter. I just completed the newsletter today. Who's really behind what's going on in the world? Why are our values changing? Why is it that, you know, 50 years ago, why America was a Christian nation, America is no longer a Christian nation today? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I was just saying that if you have not yet read my May newsletter, it is up on the Internet. It's called The Occult Hierarchy. What is the occult hierarchy? Where it is the people who rule America and the world today. And we name some names. We begin to develop this whole idea that there really is a worldwide conspiracy. However, it is a conspiracy against God. And this is the conspiracy that has existed since time began. And, of course, anybody who attacks the idea of conspiracy is basically attacking the very precepts of the gospel, because time and again, if you read the scriptures, if you get out your various source books that give you the meaning of words and the use of words, why, you'll find that time and again the Holy Scriptures tells us that there is a conspiracy against God. And you'll find it listed in Jeremiah 11:9 or Ezekiel 22:25 in the second Psalm. Right now, I guess Carlos is back on the line. Hi, Carlos. We lost you there.
Yes, my telephone went off. One last comment here, Dr. Stan.
Go
you were
ahead.
Talking about Bolivia recently. And you know why they had the riots recently over there in Bolivia?
Well, part of it is because the Bolivian president had signed deals with the American oil and gas companies to steal their oil and gas and give it away for nothing.
Exactly. But one other thing is that the people were rebelling also because they found out that the IMF and the World Bank lent money, and that part of the contractual agreement was that they were going to pay back 90 cents on the dollar to service the debt that was loaned to them. Now, can you imagine 90 cents on the dollar in interest?
Well, I think that was the point that Mr. Perkins made, that so many of the third world countries, 50% of all the tax money that was collected by the central government was used simply to service their debt. It was simply another means of enslaving the people of the world. And you know, the greatest hypocrisy is our leaders always talk about compassion and the poor children and the poverty in these third world countries. And then they promote policies that will make them even poorer with more deprivation and more starvation. And of course, as John Perkins said yesterday, 24,000 people die of starvation in the world somewhere every single day. But we never talk about that. Isn't that interesting?
Well, Dr. Stan, I feel real bad because John Wolfowitz, the neoconservative, which is pushing the world, the war in Iraq, one of the people, one of the proponents of the war in Iraq, he is also now head of the World Bank. He's in charge of giving all the loans to third world countries.
And heaven help those third world countries, and heaven help America. Thanks so much, Carlos. Bye-bye.
Good evening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Eric here. Eric, did you have a quick question or comment, or just about the end of the program?
Yeah, quick question, Dr. Stan. A friend of mine and I had a debate about JFK. I was under the impression that, you know, for me, with the organization that he came from and how Sam Giancana rigged votes in Chicago to get him elected and all that stuff, but somewhere down the line, I was under the impression that he decided to be a people president and really do good things for America, and that's one of the reasons he was killed, the things he wanted to implement. Did he decide to be a people president?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he was basically pushing the socialist policies, but he wanted to push his own policies. He wasn't going along with the establishment, and they will not tolerate a man who wants to think for himself. He certainly wanted to have some sort of a silverback currency. He had signed an executive order to that effect. He wanted to get our troops out of Vietnam. He wouldn't play ball with many of their major programs. And, well, of course, he wanted to cut back on the oil depletion allowance. He had embarrassed the Central Intelligence Agency by firing Dulles, Alan Dulles. He embarrassed the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, by demanding that they go after the mafia, because Hoover hadn't gone after the mafia.
Those sound like things that would be good for America.
Well, in some ways they would have been. He was very, very liberal. He was really was pushing for socialism, which is a means of centralizing power in his hands. But he wanted to be in charge, and he didn't understand the president is supposed to be simply subservient to the ruling elite.
Well, your answer to that would be no, he didn't really decide somewhere down the line to be a people president.
No, I don't think he did. I think that he was simply going along with the elitist programs. He was trained in socialism at the London School of Economics, just as David Rockefeller was trained over there. So, you know, I think that I feel very sorry about what happened to him, but he was leading us into socialism.
Okay, well, I was wrong.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I just want to mention that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there listening to us across America, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. Now, you can listen to our programs somewhere in America on the radio 5 hours a day, or, of course, you can listen to on the Internet 5 hours a day. And you can go to our website at radioliberty.com and find out if we're on the Genesis Network, we're on the American Freedom Network, we're on the IBN Network, we're on the Soundwave 2000 Network. Of course, we're on the Radio Liberty Network as well. And we just hope that you'll listen to our programs, encourage others to listen to the programs, and help us to get the truth out across America, the information you're not getting elsewhere. To really understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in, let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, you should. And, of course, you can get the book, you can get the video, you can get the audio tape. And then, of course, our latest newsletter really will begin taking you into the true nature, who is coordinating this whole spiritual movement. Our main newsletter is The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1. The June newsletter, which will be available probably in about 3 weeks, is The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. And when I start writing the books, I'm not necessarily, pardon me, start writing the newsletters, I'm not sure how they're going to end up. But I'm always amazed, and this, I think you'll really enjoy these two newsletters. We'll be glad to send you the first one. It is available now if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. That is The Occult Hierarchy. And as my wife said, well, I hope your next newsletter is going to be a little more uplifting. That last one was certainly a downer. And it's a downer, of course, because it tells you exactly what's really going on in the world, and the information you're not going to get elsewhere. So if you'd like to get a copy of the May Radio Liberty letter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, or you can go up on the Internet at radioliberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-89. Pardon me, you go up on radioliberty.com and look up the May 2005 newsletter. And of course, it's The Occult Hierarchy. We'll be back here in just a moment for the second hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and we're going to be talking about some of the latest issues, some of the important issues that everybody should be thinking about here in the United States, and many times you're going to be hearing issues discussed that are not certainly being focused on by the controlled media. And then, of course, you're going to get the idea, the interpretation of unfolding events from Joel Skousen, who is the senior editor of World Affairs Brief, and Andrew works with him because Andrew's his son. So without further ado, hi, Andrew. How are you tonight?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, great to have you back again. And tell us, what are the issues you'd like to talk about this evening?
Well, this week's brief has quite a few issues. We've got some very cogent comments by Representative Ron Paul, the conservative, probably the best Republican
conservative we have in the House of Representatives.
Exactly, in the House of Representatives. Thank you. And he talks about the cost of the war in Iraq. He provides some very cogent analysis of that, I think. And then we'll also talk about the recent bailout of the World Banks and the IMF. We'll touch on some of the recent developments with the Saddam Hussein trial, and touch on some of the major topics that have hit the press this past couple of weeks.
All right. Well, I think the subject certainly of the war in Iraq is so important, and certainly I'm sure that Representative Ron Paul has some very, very cogent remarks about that. It's interesting that the president's popularity has dropped now to about 48%, and an awful lot of the people think that he's not doing a very good job over there. We shouldn't be there. The losses of human life, and of course, we're only really concerned about the losses of Americans. I think we ought to be concerned about the losses of Iraqis as well. I mean, after all, these were the people we supposedly went in to help and to save, and if you lose 100,000 people in the process of helping them, do those people really going to be grateful to us? Are they going to look to a Christian America as the sort of model that they want to have? We've established supposedly a democracy there, but of course, nobody was allowed to know who was running for office until 2 days before the election, because we were afraid that we were all going to be killed and there wouldn't be anybody running. The insurgents would kill them. And we actually had to pick the people who were running. Certainly this was not a free election at all, contrary to everything we've been told here in the United States. It may have been a majority vote, but the candidates were all picked, sort of like right here in the United States at so many of our elections. So let's get to what Ron Paul was saying. What did Ron Paul actually say about the cost over there in Iraq?
Well, he summarizes some of the important points that happens with every major war and conflict that goes on, and he talks about some of the hidden costs that most people don't see that are associated with war, and it helps to kind of bring it into perspective whether or not a particular war is worth fighting or not, once you include all of the costs associated with battling another nation.
Now, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and we're going to talk about the cost of the war, the real cost of the war in Iraq, as far as the dignity, as far as the preservation of America is concerned. Well, I guess this evening is Andrew Skousen. We're going to be talking about the cost of the war in Iraq. Go ahead and pick up the story there.
All right. Well, as we mentioned, we're talking about Representative Ron Paul's comments. He provides some
some very interesting analysis. He goes through and breaks down the costs of war into what I consider about 9 major categories. He says that the cost of war is more than just the dollar spent. It includes deaths, injuries, and destruction, along with all of the unintended consequences that go on for decades. The first point, of course, is dollars that he mentions. War is costly. All of us as taxpayers know that those expensive weapons that they use out in Iraq don't come free, and we eventually are footing the bill for that. But there's two sides to money spent. There's not just the direct funds that are spent on the war, taken from the American taxpayers directly, but there is also debt and deficit spending that is used. Obviously, the administration who is intent on war tries to keep any negative aspects of the war from affecting the people at home, and one of the most direct felt detriments to going to war is the cost of it. And so governments historically have always tried to hide war by financing it through debt and also by inflating the money supply, which is deficit spending, which, as any good economist knows, is only a way of postponing the payment of war or payment of anything. All of the money that government spends has to be eventually taken from somewhere, and the laws of natural money always balance themselves out eventually.
And I really think that's so interesting that here we are involved in a war. We originally put in $200 billion and then another $80 billion, and what they're not telling us within the last week, why the House of Representatives authorized another $45 billion. But what they're going to do is it's not going to cost us anything. They're going to simply borrow from future generations. If we're going to raise the taxes to pay for the war, why, there would be tremendous outcry from the American people. So they're not going to do that. They're going to first put this off to future generations, and then destroy the value of everybody's savings by inflation, and that way they won't have to pay the money back. It's the greatest scam of the world, and the average American has no concept. They never stop and ask, how can we cut taxes and then go to war and spend more money? And we'll be back in just a moment with Andrew Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and I think that's really such an important point, Andrew, and the fact that, well, basically what we're doing is, you know, if we were going to tax the people to pay for the war in Iraq, and we were going to raise taxes, there'd be tremendous opposition to the war, because people don't like paying taxes. But what the scam is that they've actually cut taxes and increase spending. Now, how can you do that? Why, you simply borrow from future generations, and there's no way possible to ever pay all that money back. So you have, as you pointed out so well, you have to go ahead and destroy the value of the currency. People don't understand what's going on. They say, isn't it wonderful? We can fight a war. We're not going to have to pay for it. Our taxes aren't going up without realizing, of course, they're stealing the value of their pension funds. They're stealing the value of their savings. They're stealing the value of their annuities and of their CDs and everything that they have in the way of insurance policies, everything that is incremented in dollars. So it's really a great system. You get a war for absolutely nothing. It doesn't cost anything, at least that the people are aware of.
Exactly, and that's the point, is that it's more hidden this way. It's not direct form of taxation. It's an indirect form. It's a sly way of taxing away people by slowly devaluing the dollar and the value of people's savings. It's stealing from the cradle is what it is. It's a terrible cost of war, and that's just one of the costs of war. So we've talked about both aspects of the money. We've also talked about the immediate effects that are felt by people with deaths and injuries of loved ones and acquaintances. I think there's hardly anyone out there now who doesn't directly know someone who's either a soldier over there in Iraq or directly part of the ongoing war effort over there. And then, of course, there's the destruction that occurs during the war. We haven't felt much of this destruction part because we're so far away and shielded from the war, but it's a very real part of every war.
The thing is that how do the Iraqi people feel when their house is destroyed? I mean, they're not terrorists. They just want to be allowed to live their lives, and their house is destroyed, and their business is destroyed, and the value of their currency is destroyed, and maybe they lose a son or a daughter or a wife. How would you feel about the people who came in and did that to you? And in the name of, well, we're here to protect you. We're from the United States, and we're here to protect you from the wicked Saddam Hussein. But your house is gone. Your relatives, your family have been killed. What is your feeling going to be towards Christian America?
Yeah, I think that we're making more enemies out of the people that we're supposedly freeing over there than we are doing much friend making.
And we're creating more terrorists and more people who hate America every single day that we're there.
That's right. That's right. And that is definitely another cost of this war that is not directly seen. And that kind of ties into one of the other costs of war that Ron Paul touches on. He says that war necessitates often, well, not necessitates, he says, government officials begin a systematic campaign of deception and lying in order to justify the war and their mistakes. They never admit mistakes, even when obvious to others. The Iraq war now has been going on for, 15 years, and there's still no end in sight to it. So one of the major costs of war, and this doesn't necessarily have to be the case, but historically is almost always the case, is that you lose truth with war. It encourages lying and cover up and justification on the part of politicians and the people in power to create a farce or a facade to be able to continue with the direction that they want to take the war.
What is that old saying? In war, the first casualty is the truth, and we saw that with the story of Pat Tillman, the football player. I think he was playing for the Arizona football team. He gave up a $3 million contract to volunteer to fight for his country. He was sent to Afghanistan, and the story we got, he was killed in battle, fighting valiantly, killing the enemy, and, my goodness, they were going to give him an award for bravery, and the truth of the matter was he was killed by his own men. He was killed by friendly fire, and the government lied about his death, and the family is furious that they would use him to try to get patriotic fervor behind this stupid war where our men are killing our own men by friendly fire. The same thing with the story of Jessica Lynch. You remember the heroine who was captured by the Iraqis and taken to the hospital, but don't you worry, the special forces came to rescue her, and but she fought to the last bullet till she was out of ammunition, and none of it was true. I mean, the Iraqis had made arrangements to have her transferred to the American military, and they sent the special forces in. There were no Iraqi military there at all. The Iraqis were ready to turn her over. They'd already talked to the American forces. It was all for the benefit of the American people. The heroic heroine, and, of course, the brave special forces going in, and it was all a fraud. And if they would lie about that, what else would they lie about? If they'd lie about Jessica Lynch, if they'd lie about Pat Tillman, what else are they lying to the American people about? Can you believe anything the government says? And I ask the question rhetorically, but I'd be interested in your answer to that. So go ahead. You know, it is so infuriating, Andrew, as we see this. Deceit and deception becomes a way of life. What happened to moral America and truthful America and the idea that a man's word, is as good as his bond?
It's true, Archstan. And that actually leads into probably the worst cost of war, and that is that very often wars, especially currently, are used to encourage a hidden agenda to create a conflict and to create a situation that that forces people out of their comfort zones to a point where they are willing to give up more of their liberty for so-called security. And, of course, giving up liberty never ends up being more secure. It just ends up being less free. And we have seen, I think, with probably all of the wars back until, I mean, it's hard to trace back as far as a war has been fought without an ulterior motive that was meant to encourage a particular result. But we know for sure that clear back, even during the so-called Great War, the First World War, there was a lot of collusion and conspiracy among some of the top leaders of countries to try to create and foment certain conflicts to encourage people into certain directions. And if you look at the result of the wars overall, it has always been towards encouraging people to rely on a single form of government as the ultimate panacea toward not having any more war. This is the great solution to war, is to say, well, let's get rid of all national sovereignties across the board, and if there aren't any nations, then there won't be groups to fight against each other. And this is, of course, a deception. World government is never a way to limit war. In fact, if you look at history, the monopoly on power is never a source of a peace. It's, as Ron Paul points out, most wars could be avoided with better diplomacy, a mutual understanding of minding one's own business, and respect for the right of self-determination. So respecting other people's right to make their own choices, as long as it doesn't conflict with your own rights, having a good source of diplomacy and a certain amount of healthy friendship with other countries, and a good deal of understanding how to mind your own business.
Well, I think the point is well made. I believe all of the wars in this last century were fought by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, because out of the horror of the wars and out of the chaos of the wars and out of the suffering of the wars would come the call for a world government. The First World War was fought and prolonged and extended simply so there would be so much carnage that the people of Europe and America would be willing to have a world government. Well, of course, there was that much suffering in Europe, and the people there were willing to accept the League of Nations, but the Americans only lost 125,000 men, and the average American realized we never should have gone into war, and they weren't willing to give up their sovereignty to establish a world government, which made sure that we would have to have a Second World War. And the Second World War was fought for exactly the same reason, to bring about a world government and to create the United Nations, but still the American people, recalcitrant as they are, didn't want to give up their freedom and sovereignty. And that's why I'm firmly convinced that our leaders are doing everything they can to plunge us into World War III. And out of the chaos and horror and suffering of that war will come, of course, the ultimate acceptance of the New World Order, the New World Religion, and the New World Monetary System. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Cleon Skousen, with Andrew Skousen, and we're going to be talking more about the cost of war. And, of course, Ron Paul's, Congressman Ron Paul's article, which you'll find summarized in the latest World Affairs Brief. So we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Andrew Skousen. Andrew, go ahead and pick up the story from there.
All right. Well, I've been talking a lot about the different costs of war. We've been going through Ron Paul's excellent analysis of what the true costs of war are. I would like to say in closing about this, though, that war itself is not necessarily always a bad thing. There definitely are situations where it's very important to protecting freedom, and I don't mean to say that we should become pacifists. Quite on the contrary, I think that freedom is always worth fighting for, but we have to pick and choose our battles to be behind truly the right cause when we do fight. Obviously, there's a lot of difficult parts of world government that are difficult to hammer out about when it's appropriate to attack another country or not. And I think that it's very important to go through all of these different costs that are associated with war and analyze them and make sure that all of the motives are correct. And of course, the only true motives to going to war are when your individual fundamental rights are inherently in an absolute danger. And that, of course, is usually just an imminent invasion when it's appropriate to take action. And in those cases, it is appropriate to take only as much force as necessary to stop that imminent invasion, not to go out of your way to try to impose a form of government or control on another population. So there's definitely some tricky issues in there, but I just wanted to point out that there can be moral grounds for going to war, but I do not think that the war in Iraq justifies any of those.
I agree with you totally, Andrew. And I think that the American people must accept the fact that we've been lied to by our leaders who had an agenda. The decision was made to go to war with Iraq long before the 9/11 attack. Anybody who doubts that has only to go to the Project for the New American Century website, newamericancentury.org, read their letters to the president in 1998, again in the year 2000, demanding we go to war with Iraq. Who were these people who signed the letters at that time? Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, the whole neocon crowd who has taken over control of our government. So we know that they were planning, from Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty, and I believe it's page 96, but I could be wrong, that on the Paul O'Neill's book, and if anybody wants exact quotation, I'll get it for them, that in January and February of 2001, they were already wondering how they were going to get the American people to go along with a preemptive attack on Iraq. And, of course, the hijackers didn't attack until September 11th. So they knew they wanted to go to war. They needed an excuse to go to war, and the hijackers gave us that excuse. But not to attack Iraq. Maybe it's justified to go after Osama bin Laden. The trouble is we never went after Osama bin Laden. I think this is a totally unjust war, and we'll be back in just a moment with Andrew Skousen here at Radio Liberty. Okay, well, Andrew, of course, has summarized then why the current war. We can ask a number of very, very pointed questions. Are we justified in being at war? And Andrew says that we are justified in being at war to defend America, but are we really defending America by destroying Iraq and killing the Iraqi people? Is that going to, are we really defending America, or is there another agenda? So pick up the story from there, Andrew.
All right, well, we've touched on several of the aspects of the cost of the war in Iraq, and we've talked about Ron Paul's comments about this. I'd like to close with what my father, Joel Skousen, says at the end of the article that he analyzed during this week's brief. He says, "I disagree partially with Ron Paul's last conclusion, where he said that most wars could be avoided with better diplomacy, mutual understanding, and minding one's own business, and respect for the right of self-determination. He says, I disagree partially. He says, wars have their root in the ideas and motives of conspiring groups of evil men. Evil will never be overcome by diplomacy and understanding alone. Force is all that evil respects. Wars persist because of two major factors, he thinks. On one hand, leaders fighting for the right do not prosecute wars to their full conclusion and fail to eradicate evil leaders and institutions completely. On the other, evil spiritual sources continue to cultivate and breed evil during and after a war, especially in an atmosphere of permissiveness and worldly preoccupation. Unfortunately, when we do finally gain a certain amount of freedom and prosperity, people have a tendency to become blind, dumb, and happy, and evil has a tendency to thrive within those kinds of situations. So I think it's important that as conservatives we need to stay sharp and stay on top of things, to be mindful of the erosion that can take place at our liberties and the gradual fomentation of wars.
And I think that your father's point is very well made, as somebody once said, that all that's necessary for evil to triumph is the good people do nothing. And the reason that this war continues is because the good people are doing nothing, and I believe that evil is triumphing. Go ahead, Andrew.
Okay. Well, let's switch gears partially and tackle one of the other stories that we talked about in the brief this week. There was a lot of hubbub about the fact that there was a great amount of debt that was canceled, a great amount of foreign debt.
And we were supposedly going to cancel somewhere between $40 billion and $55 billion in debt from third world nations, I think 18 third world nations. We were supposedly going to forgive their debt, and so the International Monetary Fund and the African Development Bank and the International Monetary Fund would simply write off the debt, and then these countries wouldn't have to pay back the money that they'd borrowed. Was that pretty much
right.
What it was about?
That's right, exactly. Now, to give people sort of a background about what's going on here, there are many countries throughout the world who are not handling finance as well, shall we say, through various reasons, and asked to borrow money from other countries. One of the principal sources of lending has been through the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and among African nations, the African Development Bank. These are all global organizations that pull money and lend them a huge amount. We're talking billions of dollars to various countries. And of course, the assumption, as with any bank loan, is that you will be able to lend this out with interest and regain that money at the end. And so this announcement that $40+ billion is basically not required to be paid back by all these different countries kind of comes as a shock to any of the accountants among us. Specifically because one wonders, well, how can we just forgive debts? I mean, money has to come from somewhere, and if somebody lent it out, that means that they don't have it. So it's an interesting situation where all this money came from.
All right, well, we're going to talk a little bit about this. How can you lend $40 billion, $55 billion, and then simply write off the money? Well, of course, we wrote off the loans from England and France after the First World. How are we able to do it? Well, we'll talk a little bit about, perhaps a little bit about money when we get back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Andrew, how can they possibly write off somewhere between $40 and $55 billion? I mean, a much hard-earned money. How can they do that?
Well, it's an interesting situation, Dr. Stan. If you take a look at all of the countries that borrowed this money, quote-unquote borrowed, almost all of these countries were going to default on their loans anyway. And this gifting of the money to sort of help them save face, as well as help allow them to possibly gain more loans in the future.
And basically what you're saying is there was just no way that these countries could pay back the money. Many of them were taking 50, 60, 70% of all the money they got from the poor people in their country to use it to pay the interest on their loans, to service their loans, and a lot of them were just going to say, we're not going to do that, and the whole monetary system is built upon faith. How do you get around preventing people from defaulting on their loans? Why you forgive them the money? Because we can't let the American people realize we have a phony fiat money system and there's nothing behind it. All the money, almost all of it, is simply an entry on a ledger, and there is nothing behind that money. Nothing of inherent value other than this scam that they put over. And of course, as certainly Daniel Webster had said so many years ago, why, there is no contrivance for cheating the working masses that is better than the delusion of paper money. There is no contrivance for cheating the working masses as effective as the delusion of paper money. And this is really what it's all about. It's all a delusion. And now, of course, you just write off the delusion because there's nothing there. Would that be a fair statement?
It is. And what's most interesting about this act is that it's being claimed as being the most magnanimous act since the Marshall Plan. They're comparing, of course, to the Marshall Plan, which occurred after World War II, when millions of dollars in aid was given to help bolster the destroyed countries after World War II. And there's an article by Pat Buchanan who lists four major reasons why this is not a cause for celebration. He says first, that $40 billion was squandered or stolen by the most corrupt regimes and biggest thieves in the third world. The money is gone. We shall never see it again, and all the wastrels and crooks who got away with it will not be pursued.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen. He's talking about the money that was written off by the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank, somewhere between $40 and $55 billion. That figure changes where you read it. And how did they get away with it? Well, Pat Buchanan has written an article. Why don't you sort of pick up? Pat had four reasons why this was a bad idea.
Right. So to preface this, I think people need to realize that they're trying to pass this off as a great thing. We're gifting money, we're helping out poor nations by not requiring them to pay us back. This is a big-hearted thing that we're doing. But if you take a look at who gains from this, you come away with rather a different picture. First of all, almost all of the money that was gifted away went to crooks and thieves and people inside of these governments who squandered away most of the money. Second, Pat Buchanan mentions, is that the bankers at the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank, who failed to do the due diligence when they made these $1 billion in loans and lied about how good the loans were, aren't going to be exposed or embarrassed or prosecuted like they should be for giving out all of these loans. So the bankers aren't going to get even their hands slapped because of all these egregious loans that they encouraged and managed to get passed to give to these countries. Third, he says, the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank will see all of their lost funds replenished. Now, as we know, banks usually can't go by giving away money and not requiring people to pay it back. So these banks aren't going to default and go under as they should when this kind of thing happens. Instead, no, they're going to receive all of the money that they lent out from throughout the American taxpayers. So basically, this was a gift of the American taxpayers' hard-earned money that's taken from us through taxes, given out to these countries to finance crooks and squanderers and basically all of this money has nothing to show for it. Fourth, he says, the American taxpayers will have to pony up the cash for the historic bailout of the international banks. And this is because American banks have guaranteed these loans, so George Bush had to add billions to our deficit to finance these things, which of course, as we mentioned previously, is all going to come out of American coffers eventually anyway. So he says this last statement that Pat Buchanan makes in the article, I think, is one of the most cogent. He says, make no mistake, this is not a bailout of Africa's poor or Latin American peasants. This is a bailout of the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank. They will get the money to replace their lost loans. Corrupt leaders of poor nations get paid off. Large international banks get back their money. The poor citizens of the bailout nations are no better off than before, and the taxpayers get the bill. Who's celebrating now? Yeah, this is definitely not a caucus celebration. Dr. Stan, I'm sorry to say that this is a terrible catastrophe as far as monetary policy goes, and the poor people who were supposed to receive these funds, in fact, are much, much worse off because their governments are allowed to hold on that much longer without having to face up to the bad policies that they've been implementing.
And I remember, of course, at the end of the Vietnam War, well, at least in 1968, war didn't end, but that was the end of it. Robert McNamara's term as Secretary of Defense, and he was the man who sent our boys over to fight in Vietnam, but never allowed to win, did everything they could to prevent them from winning. He then went on to become president of the World Bank, and he was president of the World Bank from about 1968 or 69, right up until the 1980. And I remember reading an article written by the assistant president of the World Bank who'd worked under McNamara, who said, after 10 years of Robert McNamara and the World Bank helping the people of Africa, they were far worse off than they had been before Robert McNamara became the head of the bank. Well, from then on, it's been all downhill. And all the talk about helping people in the third world countries and helping the diseased and helping the children, this is simply garbage. The people have progressively become increasingly impoverished to the point where 24,000 people die of starvation every single day in third world countries. The poverty levels have climbed from 50, 60, 70, 80% in many of these countries. You know, 2 billion people make less than a dollar a day in salary. You know, we have more poverty, and everything we have done in the name, of course, convincing the American people it's all for good, has simply impoverished the people even further. And no way that these countries could ever get an opportunity to build up their infrastructure or use the tax money they collected to help the people, because it's all being used to service their debt. And I suspect that now we're going to lend them more money so we can get more interest back. That's what it's really going to be all about. And it's about time the American people realize that our leaders say one thing, but they have an entirely different agenda.
That's a very good point, especially that last point, that this was played up in the media as a very great thing, and just the opposite is the case once you stop to actually consider the facts and who's actually benefiting from this. And it's a a travesty in all forms. And in fact, it's a travesty for all of the countries that received this money as well. All of these countries were socialist in nature, which means that most of the population was hooked on getting free benefits from the government in various forms, healthcare, you know, free forms of education, etc., etc. And when the governments couldn't afford to continue to pay these people for all these benefits, since want is always greater than any amount of money that the economy can afford, they started to borrow, and that only increased the appetite of people. Once you give more fuel to the fire, it goes even further out of control. So these countries are even further over their heads than what they would have been if they hadn't been able to borrow money at all. It's a terrible way to foment the wrong forms of government around the world and postpone them having to come to grips with financial reality, which eventually has to hit home with all forms of socialist and communist forms of government.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you totally.
Yeah, well, I think we've touched on that well enough. I'd like to move on and touch on some of the big headline news that have been coming out recently in the news. Shall we?
Go right ahead.
Well, first, let me perhaps take a short break and explain to people a little bit about the World Affairs Brief. We handle two sources of information that we provide to people. The first is available for free on our website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's worldaffairsbrief, all one word, .com. And people can log on there. It's a very active website. We're continuously updating things. And what we do is we have researchers who scour the web through and look at multiple forms of news, and we go through and cull out what we think are the most appropriate stories and other points of view about the hot topics that are going on every day in the press to provide people with a more balanced view of what all the different things are that's out there. The internet is such a great resource because almost all the information about the stories that are talked about are out there on the web. But if anyone is like me, we usually don't have time to go through and search for all of the different aspects of truth ourselves. Our website tries to help with that. We have researchers who do that searching for you and provide short summaries about what each of the articles are that we found at different sources throughout the internet, and then we provide a link to that story so that people can go through and see links to stories that they wanted to know more about but haven't found all of the information that I think most people feel is out there with most of the stories. And they can click on these links and find good, solid pieces of news and articles about these current events that we don't always get through the establishment press. So I think it's a very great source of good information that's already out there on the net. We just provide sort of a hub for people to find it more easily.
And I think that you really do an excellent job, and I recommend the website worldaffairsbrief.com. That's worldaffairsbrief.com. Go there first thing in the morning. Pull down the page, the articles that you want to read more about. You get a summary of them, so you get an idea what they're talking about. But if you want to read more, then, of course, you can link to it, and you can get the entire article. But a wonderful way to find out what's really going on, the information that people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and so many of the other commentators are paid so much not to bring him. So let me recommend World Affairs Brief. It's got great information.
That's right. Now, many people have commented, though, that they would like to see a little bit more of cohesion. Sometimes it's hard to see the bigger picture with things because often we're just focusing on small, minor details, and it's difficult to see where the true general trends are and to sort out how the media puts spins on things and what is really happening behind the scenes. And that's where the second source of information that we provide is very useful, and that's through the weekly brief that we pull together. We go through and analyze the most important topics that we think are going on, and people who read the brief consistently see that we attempt to try to track the general trends in government and in world policy and where the nations are heading, and also try to analyze what the reasons are behind some of the stuff that's going on. And I think this is one of the biggest helps that people can get from the information that we provide, is that it actually helps to explain why some of the things happen that we see constantly that seem confusing and contradictory between what government is doing. And that is available, like I said, in a weekly brief form through email edition. And you can sign up for that by clicking on a link on the worldaffairsbrief.com website. Or you can also order a print edition. You can order one free version of it by calling toll-free area code 877-518-5888. Like I said, this is toll-free. You can call this number and order a free printed edition of the World Affairs Brief. See how you like it. It's 877-518-5888.
And, of course, if you subscribe, well, you'll get it automatically on the email every week. If you don't have email, well, you can, I think, get a hard copy, once a month?
Once a month, that's right. We summarize all of the weekly briefs and send it out in a mass mailing once a month.
It is excellent. Joel does a tremendous job of summarizing things. I'm always fascinated by his input. So, okay, fine. Go ahead.
Let's talk about one more of these stories, maybe possibly two. I think most of the people will have heard about the second memo that has come out from Britain that sheds an interesting light about the pre-war preparations for the war on Iraq and just exactly how the planning for Iraq took place.
Basically, these are so-called Downing Street memos that are coming out of England and pointing out that the British government knew we were planning on going to war long before either the American people were told, and all of the excuses that were being used by the Bush administration were simply not true.
That's right, and most people will remember about a month ago when the first Downing Street memo came out. It commented that, it was a summary of a meeting that was held to inform British Prime Minister Tony Blair about the Iraq war and the preparations that the U.S. was making to go to war with Iraq. This was back in 2002, before we had even established firmly, supposedly, that America was actually going to attack the nation of Iraq. And the blockbuster with that previous memo that came out of Downing Street was that the MI6 analysis was that the U.S. has basically decided that it's going to war with Iraq, and there was a very powerful quote there that said that basically the facts are being fixed around the policy.
The facts are being fixed around the policy. In other words, they were simply creating the intelligence material, and it really wasn't true. They were going to lie to the American people, was essence what they're saying.
That's right, exactly. So this second memo that has come out about this actually happened this is a not the minutes of the meeting, which was basically what the previous memo was. This is the preparation packet for the meeting, and it talks about how the Bush administration was intent on the war, and that it predicted that it would be a protracted and costly post-war occupation of that country as well.
And so the British intelligence knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew that we weren't justified in going to war. They knew we weren't preparing to actually carry the war to its conclusion. It was going to drag on. It was going to be costly and lengthy. And so this was all known ahead of time. Why then did we go to war? Andrew?
The memo...
Hold that thought there for just a moment. We'll be right back here.
Radio Liberty.
Okay, Andrew. Well, of course, a rhetorical question is, if the British knew ahead of time that if intelligence wasn't adequate, the British knew ahead of time it was going to be a long and costly war, why would we have gone to war?
Yes, that's the kicker right there. Is why was the Americans so intent, even at that stage, of going to war with Iraq? And the second Downing Street memo that's come out has described it as going to be a very long and a very protracted and costly war, and that the post-war occupation of the country was likely to be very long and drawn out as well. The most powerful effect of this memo has been, of course, that this information was released this early. In other words, what was happening is that the British were already talking amongst themselves that this was a done deal, and they were talking about the minor aspects. This wasn't whether or not we'll go to war. This is okay. Well, they're going to war, and these are the effects of what it's going to be, and they were talking about this in detail, as if it was a sure fact, which I think if everyone was honest with themselves as they were examining the facts back when there was a hymn and haw about whether or not we were going to war with Iraq, they would have to honestly conclude to themselves that everyone really knew that this war in Iraq was going to take place, and it was just a matter of time before it actually happened. I think that occasionally we fool ourselves into thinking a different way based on all of the hoopla that we hear in the media than the conclusions that we would reach if we would just sit down and examine the facts alone by themselves without the commentary. I think that the 6 months before the war on Iraq, if people just looked at the facts in and of themselves, they would see that the Bush administration was absolutely intent on the war in Iraq, and that it was just trying to find a reason to go to war, and of course the weapons of mass destruction was the reason that supposedly we went to war, and subsequently we found out that this was not the case. And
hold that thought for just a moment. We'll bring our stations back online here.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is simply saying that the Downing Street memo had information from British intelligence, MI6, and they knew, of course, that they were fixing the intelligence to justify going to war. It was going to be a long and costly and expensive and difficult war, and of course it was very obvious to the British that the decision had been made long before, of course, the American people were told, and they were going to come up with an excuse to go to war, because the major function and objective of our government was to go to war, and it didn't matter that there weren't any weapons of mass destruction there. They figured they'd be able to sell that to the American people, which they did, and now 1,700 Americans are dead, and that's just in Iraq. We never include the number of died in Afghanistan, and how many of thousands are casualties? Will their lives have been destroyed? And how many Iraqi civilians have been killed? 100,000? 125,000? We don't know, and believe me, the government is not going to tell us.
That's right. And one last point about this that I think is a real smoking point is that a quote that was given by Christopher Meyer, who was an ambassador to the UK, who had dinner with President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair on September 20th, which was just 9 days after September 11th of the year 2001. And he said something very interesting about the conversation that went on between President Bush and Tony Blair. He says, the conversation went like this. President Bush says, Tony, we're going to Afghanistan in a week or two, but that won't take long, and we get out of there and go right into Iraq. Are you with me, Tony? Are you with me? And Christopher Meyer says, my goodness, it was really that Tony was sort of nonplussed, but he said, yes, sir, I'm with you, Mr. President.
Yes, sir, I'm with you, Mr. President. That would suggest that maybe George Bush is higher up in the hierarchy than Tony Blair is. After all, Tony Blair is the Prime Minister of Great Britain, but he's saying, yes, sir, I'm right with you. What does that suggest?
Yeah, it suggests that there's definitely a power hierarchy there.
Right, well, but, we're out of time. Andrew, thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we look forward to having you back with us again next week. Let's get that telephone number out just one more time if people would like to get in touch with you.
Great. That's toll-free, 1-877-518-5888.
One more time.
Area code 1-877-518-5888.
And that's if you'd like to get a free copy of the World Affairs Brief. Hey, thanks very much for being with us.
Great.
Good night.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Good night.
All right, fine. Well, that was Andrew Skousen. A lot of interesting information that I think you need to contemplate. I mean, who's responsible for our going into Iraq? And, of course, now they're saying, well, it's going to be another couple of years before we can get out. And of course, the truth of the matter is we're not planning on getting out. We're planning on being there permanently. But we can't tell the American people that. How can I make that statement? Well, I've read the plan. Where can you read the plan? You go to their website, newamericancentury.org. Pull down their publication put out by the Project of the New American Century and called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And if you read it, you'll find out that they're saying we've got to have defenses, permanent bases in Iraq, irrespective of whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not. That's what it's all about. But they can't tell the American people they've lied. They're not going to tell the parents of the boys who've lost arms and legs and the women who've lost arms and legs and the parents of the boys who died over there. We can't tell them that this was all contrived ahead of time as part of a power play, and behind that are dark and sinister spirits of forces plunging America, indeed the whole world, into World War III. Well, we live in difficult times. Understand, we're involved in the spiritual battle that's being fought for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Please get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it. Get our latest newsletter. It's May 2005, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.